Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and CommunityProgressiveRadio.org. Before we hear from our guest, Lisa Simeone, I'd like to play an interview that I did with Ralph Pointer, the partner of Lynn Stewart, in front of the White House a few weeks ago. And he was holding vigil there until Lynn was released or until she had died. And unfortunately, we heard this past week that Lynn's application for compassionate release was denied. So here's my interview with Ralph Pointer.
Ralph Pointer, why are you here?
Well, I'm here to alert people and to let the president and all of his minions know that we are aware of what is happening to Lynn Stewart. Lynn Stewart, the person who was in front of the movement that made it possible for him to be where he is, we want to ask him why he is not doing something for people who did everything for him. Lynn Stewart is among those people. Now, I'm here to stand, to let everyone know I didn't forget Lynn until she is either dead in prison or until she comes home.
And why is Lynn in prison, Ralph?
Lynn is in prison because she exposed the American government for what it is on many levels. When she cross-examined Emmett Salem on the witness stand, he admitted that the FBI knew about World Trade Center 1. And when Lynn asked him the question, what did they tell you when you told them that the materials were going to blow up, they told Emmett Salem to shut his mouth. And when Lynn Stewart said, repeat that, he did. And so now that is the public record. And after Lynn Stewart was convicted for her political beliefs, and that is the belief that people have the right to self-determination and self-defense, the government said to the jury, you see, she is a terrorist. When they asked her her feelings on Martin Luther King, she said she was not a supporter of Martin Luther King, but a supporter of Nelson Mandela, who refused to renounce violence in the struggle for liberation. And the government said, you see, she's a terrorist in league with other terrorists that she is defending. Accused terrorists. Falsely accused terrorists. And so, Lynn Stewart, after conviction, traveled around the country to law schools and universities discussing the Bill of Rights, debating with anyone who would debate her. No one debated her, and the Second Circuit increased her sentence from 28 months to 120 months because they said she traveled around the country corrupting our youth in law schools and universities. And at the time I said to Lynn, you know, you have joined the ranks of Jesus Christ and Socrates, but it didn't do them any good either. And so Lynn Stewart is suffering in prison today with cancer that was in remission when she went there. She needed an operation the week she went to the hospital, to prison. She was scheduled to go to the hospital. They insisted that she go immediately to prison, and it took them 18 months to get her surgery, and the attending physician said it was the worst case he had ever seen due to delay. And when cancer was discovered, it was 4 months before anything was done to stop the cancer. And her cancer is in stage 4. The prison has given her 18 to 24 months to live. This was 4 or 5 months ago, and still they won't release her. What are they fearing? They are fearing the voice of Lynn Stewart. I believe the truth cannot be told so as to be understood and not be to be believed. Lynn Stewart tells the truth so as to be understood, and she's very believable, and she had a photographic mind when she went to prison. Let us hope that she will someday walk out of prison with that mind intact and be the sword of justice against this corrupt government. Thank you for having
talk about
me.
Her compassionate release.
There was a 1984 act compassionate release, meaning those incarcerated, when they were in certain medical conditions, they could qualify, apply and qualify for compassionate release. Lynn has met all of those standards. The only standard left for her is to die. When they say she had 18 months to 2 years to live, that is the standard. She has never been a person who was a threat to her community. She was a threat to the corrupt government. She's a threat to corruption. She's a threat to American foreign policy. She's a threat to American domestic policy because she defends morality and justice. That is a threat to all corrupt governments. We want to see Lynn Stewart free to die, surrounded by people like yourself and myself who care about her. We'd like to see her get a decent night's sleep. We'd like to see you take advantage of homeopathic medicine, food as medicine, love as a reality, as a medicine. This is what we want for Lynn Stewart, not only for Lynn Stewart, but for all people, particularly those who gave up everything for the rest of us.
I know you talk to Lynn frequently. How are her spirits?
Lynn's spirits are always good.
She inspires me so much.
She is one of those people. Her body is failing her, but her mind and her spirits are good. And she's worried about those of us who are standing out here in the sun, defending her, other political prisoners, and raising other issues. So I said, Lynn, at least I can sleep at night and eat a decent meal without shackles to my waist and ankles. And so she is a person of outstanding empathy. She understands, she appreciates everything, and when I ask her about her health care, she says, prison health care is an oxymoron. It does not exist. But I cannot complain because many people on the outside do not have health care. This is who Lynn Stewart is. And I hope to see her one day out here doing, defending other people and other issues. And this is what the government is afraid of. They don't want her out here for a day. They would like to see her die like Marilyn Monroe. Come out of the hospital very weak, last 2 weeks, and then die. But Lynn Stewart will never die because her words will always be with us.
Awesome.
Free to land.
Our guest today is Lisa Simeone. At Lisa's blog, she says that she is a writer, editor, political activist, glamour girl, and radio host extraordinaire. And she lives in Baltimore. And she also wanted me to add that after she was involved in the Occupy movement, she was blacklisted by NPR. She used to work for NPR, but she doesn't even work for NPR anymore. Does that tell you a lot about National Pentagon Radio or National Propaganda Radio? So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Lisa Simeone. Lisa Simeone, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. Glad to be here.
Well, great. I'm really glad that our mutual friend Debbie Tolson here in Potomac suggested this because I fly a lot. And I just, you know, especially since my son was killed in Iraq on April 4th, 2004, and I have just been, you know, very dismayed at the increasing, this police state oppression at the airports. And the thing is like I run into some very nice TSA agents who, you know, they seem ashamed about what they have to do to us. But then most of them are just like jackbooted authoritarian thugs. And I'm so glad that we're having this conversation because it's something that I have to face at two or three times a month. And that's just going one way, then I have to come back. So what got you interested in this subject?
I've been interested in civil liberties all my life, so this was a natural outgrowth. When I started noticing several years ago that the TSA was becoming more oppressive and intrusive, I started agitating seriously about it with my friends and coworkers and acquaintances and colleagues trying to get them to wake up to say, to see, don't you realize what's going on? Don't you realize exactly as you described it, these authoritarian figures who are shoving this behavior down our throats and who are impeding our progress and doing it in a physically, not just psychologically, but physically abusive way. Don't you see what's happening? And people just blew me off. And so I started writing about it all over the blabosphere, as I called it, in as many places as I could. And I now run this blog called TSA News Blog, where we keep tabs on everything the TSA does. I'm still stunned that people have accepted, they just really, like a herd of sheep, have accepted the abuse that the TSA is dishing out. I understand that some people have to fly. I understand that. But that is not the majority of people in this country who do fly. Most people in this country who fly are not forced to fly. They choose to. I put myself in that category, although I had stopped flying in 2010. Right before the reign of molestation was implemented, I said, that's it. Even though I love to travel and have traveled all my life all over the world, I gave that up because I said, I will not allow myself to be abused by these thugs. And I know that if all the people who could do what I do, who are in my position, who could say, I will not fly, if they would do that for 1 month, 1 month, 2 months maximum, but I think it would be more like 1 month, we would bring the airlines to their knees, and then things would change because the airlines would scream and Uncle Sam would listen. But because people aren't willing to do that, they're not willing to do an economic boycott, this abuse has continued. And, you know, Frederick Douglass said it 150 years ago. I'm paraphrasing, but basically if people are going to put up with whatever they put up with, they're going to get dished out to them what the government wants to dish out. And until more people start fighting this, and I don't see much hope of it, not in my lifetime. I don't see it changing in my lifetime. I see it actually getting worse. Because all the government has to do is scream, terror, terror, war on terror. You know,
right.
It's just a fear-mongering it's just a fear-mongering tactic. And history has shown that people fall for this all over the world, and they're falling for it in this country. They're falling right into line.
Well, you know, I have a million stories because I think I'm one of those people that has to fly and hates every second of it. So I have to go into my happy zen place when I fly, or else I'd wind up in airport jail all the time. But when I do go through security and they ask if they can go through my bag, I always ask them if my bag did something to give them probable cause to go through my bag. And, you know, I loudly protest and I talk about the Bill of Rights, but people around me, I've had dozens of people say, this is for your own safety.
Oh, yep. At least you are resisting. That's the important thing, that for people who do still fly, there are many other ways to resist. It's an economic boycott, I think, is the most powerful way, but that's not the only way that there is. There are other ways to resist. You've described some that you do, where you question them, you challenge them, you don't go quietly, even though the sheep around you are urging you to go quietly and just put their heads down and go through. There are other ways to resist. People can refuse to go through the scanners, which are an assault on the Fourth Amendment. You just say, no, I won't go through. If enough people did that, just that, it would bollocks up the works because they don't have enough people to do their abusive little pat-downs. They don't have enough employees. And so if more people would simply refuse to go through the scanner, that would tie things up. That would slow them down. They'd have to stop doing it. There are other ways. I've listed them at TSA News. I did a whole post, a very long post once, listing all the ways I could come up with to resist. Also, another way to resist is if people are getting patted down, you stand there in public and you call out by name the parts of your anatomy that they're touching. You do not stand there like I said, a dumb animal and just let them do that. You say, you're touching my breasts, you're touching my vulva, you know, your hands are on my thighs, et cetera, and don't let them get away with doing that as if it's normal. People have accepted, I find it stunning, that not only have people accepted this as normal for their own bodies, but for their children, for people who are traveling with children.
Yeah.
They're allowing their children to be touched inappropriately by strangers. I mean, what is going on?
Well, when I never go through the imaging machines or whatever they're called. I call them Michael Chertoff's rate scan machines.
Exactly.
And then yep. I always get the pat down. I haven't named the parts they're touching, which is a good idea. But after I get patted down, I always ask the lady if she's going to buy me a drink now. And then
yeah,
I say, that's the most action I've gotten since the last time I flew.
It's good to mock them as well. It's another great tactic. It's good to mock them.
And, you know, I do feel, you said you stopped flying in 2010, but I'm feeling an increasing kind of, like I said, disgust within the people who work at the TSA for what they are having to do.
There's a lot of turnover because morale is so low and because a lot of people don't want to do what they're being forced to do. However, the problem with the national security state, as you know, and with having a shitty economy. Oh, sorry. Am I not allowed to say
that? No, that's okay.
Okay.
It's a podcast. You can say whatever you want to say.
We have a shitty economy that's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse. And the national security state is one of the few places that's always hiring. There's always room. There's always jobs for people who want to spy on their fellow Americans or abuse their fellow Americans. There's always money for that. So, you know, I'm of two minds. I want to find a way to enlist TSA workers and former TSA workers in this cause. On the other hand, a lot of them are just being good Germans, and they're just going along to get along, and they're doing what they know is wrong. And one of the things that happens, and again, this has been true throughout history in all countries, at all times, in all kinds of societies, and it's true in ours as well, is that when you give people absolute power, they will eventually abuse that power. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. They will abuse that power. That is simply the way human dynamics work. And so when we've given the TSA agents absolute power. These people are beholden to no one. They do whatever they want to our bodies and our psyches and our belongings and everything, including assaulting us physically and stealing our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
These people will abuse that. It's just human nature, sadly. More of them will abuse than not. There will always be those people who will be honest, of course. There will be a few of those. But there have been plenty of experiments going back to Solomon Ash and Stanley Milgram and Philip Zimbardo. They did famous experiments going back 60 years that show that most people, when put in positions of absolute power, will abuse that power.
Absolutely.
So you're going to have a minority of people who are, like you said, you run into some nice ones and some respectful ones. That's all well and good, but that doesn't take care of the fact that most of them are not going to be nice until they're going to be abusive, and this is only going to get worse. And again, I just don't see it changing in my lifetime. I wish I had hope, but I remember when this all started in 2010, and people were saying, oh, surely the turning point will be like the porn scanners, the porno scanners, and people's children going through them, and children being touched. Surely parents won't put up with it. Well, hey, take a look around. Yeah, they're putting up with it.
Well, and I do, you know, I also tell the people who are abusing me that I say, don't you know that Michael Chertoff, I don't know if he's a consultant or works for the company that makes the rate scan machines. And you know what they say to me like 99% of the time? Who's Michael Chertoff?
Right. Well, this revolving door between government and business and corporations in all aspects of our government, not just in at the airports, is the source of so much corruption and abuse. And Michael Chertoff, yes, was a consultant for the Rapiscan company, or the Rapiscan machines, and right off the bat, sorry, I forget the name of the parent company to Rapiscan. That's just the name of those backscatter machines. Yes, he was a consultant to them, and he pushed to get them through right after he left government, right after he left the Bush administration, because, of course, they and he made lots of money, and that's the name of the game. As you know, you of all people know, the name of the game in war is profit. It's money-making for war manufacturers and war profiteers. That's what it's about, and the same thing is true with these machines and every other abusive tactic at the TSA. And it's only, you know, this is just part of a larger picture. It's not surprising what's going on. at American airports, because look at everything else that's going on in this country. Look at the illegal surveillance that's been going on since 9/11. Look at all the other abuses. Look at Guantanamo. Look at these continuing wars. These things are all connected. There's nothing separate and discrete about them. They are all connected. They are all abuses of civil liberties, whether at home or abroad. And I don't know how people can think that this country can go stomping around the rest of the world, slaughtering and creating mayhem and destruction, and not bring that same mayhem and destruction back home. Because that's the way it works. That's the way it's always worked throughout history. And we're seeing that.
Well, you know, and that's exactly right. And the scary thing to me about the TSA, Lisa, is that, you know, I don't think they have stringent qualifications to become
a TSA agent.
And, you know, the ones that do get totally rude with me, they're shocked, of course, that anybody would dare question their authority, as, you know, Cartman and South Park would say. But when they get rude with me, I just say, you know what? If it wasn't for this job, you'd be working at McDonald's. So, you know, don't take that tone with me.
Yeah, the only thing about that, I want to caution, and I try to write about this at TSA News, I don't want this to turn into a class thing, because there are a lot of people who work at McDonald's or Walmart or you name it who are doing their jobs and doing them well and are underpaid and are disrespected.
Absolutely. I don't have any disparage against those people. It's the people at the TSA who have taken their little uniform and their badge and turned it into, you know, they think that they, you know, I don't know what it is, but they get really super, you know, offended and really hurt and shocked when anybody would question them about anything.
Well, here's what I would just want to emphasize. And as you say, the power has gone to the head. That's exactly what's going on. And they get the little fake tin badge and the little faux police uniform, and they think they're, you know, God's gift to law enforcement. And people should know, by the way, they are not law enforcement. They are not law enforcement. They act like it, but they have no law enforcement authority whatsoever. But anyway, I just want to emphasize that even if they all had PhDs, it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference. They're just as abusive. I wouldn't care if they were all the most educated people in the world. That doesn't matter. They're just as abusive, and what they're doing is just as wrong and just as illegal, frankly. And I'm waiting for somebody to take this all the way up to the Supreme Court. There are a lot of lawsuits in the pipeline as we speak, but they're slowly making their way through the judicial system. I'm waiting for this to get all the way to the top, to have the justices rule on whether or not what they're doing is legal. Now, I don't necessarily hold out a lot of hope, given what the Supreme Court is, you know, but the fact is we just don't know, because it hasn't been tested that far. And it is, what they're doing is a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment, and I want to see that taken. I want to see that adjudicated all the way to the top, and I'm just hoping it happens. So anyway, to go back to the point about if they were all highly educated and had PhDs, like a lot of people in the NSA are and do, it wouldn't make it any better. They'd be just as abusive. In fact, they might even be scarier, because then they can pull all this crap about how well-trained they are and all that. You know, as it is, it's a joke, because they aren't well-trained. They're just really like Keystone Cops. And if it weren't so abusive, it would just be funny. Because they don't – this is the other thing that people – it's amazing to me that people really believe, or at least some people do, that the TSA is effective in doing anything. I mean, the fact that they take your water away, what – you know, this kind of crap. It's so ridiculous. It's such window dressing. Let's pretend that we're keeping people safe, and let's just tell them that enough, and then people will believe it. I mean, how do all these people who think the TSA is so great, how do they even walk into an Ace Hardware or a Home Depot? Aren't they scared to death about all the knives in there and all the things that are weapons, potential weapons? How do these people go about their lives? How do they drive down the street, considering that there are 35,000 traffic fatalities in this country every year? How many 911s is that? Have these people stopped driving? No. Oops, there goes their argument that they're concerned about safety. How do these people walk outside in a thunderstorm? They might get struck by lightning, because more people get struck by lightning in this country every year than are killed in terrorist attacks. So, you know, you present this logic, and it doesn't matter. They don't want to hear it. They cover their ears and shake their head and close their eyes and just go la, la, la. You can present facts and statistics out the wazoo. It does not change people's opinions because they're so wedded to this idea that there's a big, scary terrorist hiding around every corner just waiting to get them. They swallowed this line, hook, line, and sinker, and that the government has fed them. So it does. You can present all the facts in the world. Believe me, I've been doing it for years, and as have you, and you just don't change their minds. So I don't know. At this point, I do it to be a thorn in the side, you know, of the powers that be, but I don't see a lot of hope for people changing their minds. I, you know, maybe we can reach a handful, but
right.
So far, I
think that in absence of huge shows of resistance, we have to do our little shows of resistance and rebellion as often as we can every day, just to keep mm-hmm. our own integrity and sanity intact, I think. That's why
right.
I do.
Right. Well, that's true. I can't argue with that. I just wish I had, there were some signs that gave me some hope. And when you think about it, all it would take is one attack, no matter how minor, and no matter if it were a false flag or an actual attack, for people just to fall right into line. Look what happened in Boston. I mean, that to me was such a scary thing. Not the bombing at the marathon. That wasn't as scary as the reaction afterwards. That was a paramilitary takeover of an entire city. People left their homes with their hands on their heads at gunpoint. Americans left their own homes and did it willingly. And they cheered on the military that was basically putting mm-hmm. their city in lockdown and abusing them, all because of these two kids who may or may not have been working with the U.S. government anyway. Who even knows? Regardless, that was a good example of what Americans will put up with. And every time the government sees that, they ratchet it up a little bit more and a little bit mm-hmm. more and a little bit mm-hmm. more. You know, at the same thing with the TSA. If people had resisted en masse instead of just following along, the government would have dialed it back. Look what happened with just recently with the knives, allowing small knives on planes. And, oh, my God, the great hue and cry. You know, millions of us took knives and corkscrews on planes for years, and nobody ever blew anything up or hurt anybody. But they finally started to do something that may have made a little bit of sense, shockingly, because John Pistol, the head of the TSA, is such a wanker. But mm-hmm. they wanted to implement this policy. There was such an outcry from the people who mattered, from the airlines, from the flight crews, from the pilots, so that they put that on the back burner. They just took that off the table completely. So now that policy is not going through. The same thing would have happened if people had resisted to what TSA is doing in the airports. They would have scaled it back. This also happened, by the way, people should know this, that the whole ridiculous liquids rule, which really is so inane, it's just laughable. That liquid rule, that 3 ounce or 3.4 ounces, whatever it is, that was put into effect not for security but for financial reasons.
Yeah.
At first, they banned all liquids. The airlines had a fit. They couldn't handle the luggage because nobody was bringing luggage on board. They were checking it all because they had liquids. And the airlines couldn't handle it. Their baggage handlers couldn't handle it. Planes were late. Everything was off schedule. They went to the government of the U.S. and the U.K. and said, you've got to do something because this is interfering with our business. We can't take it. We're losing money. Our planes are late. And so Uncle Sam and the U.K. said, oh, okay, we'll come up with this rule, the 3.2 ounces, or the 3-point-whatever ounces rule, and that way that will ease things for you, the airlines. That's why that regulation, that procedure is in place. It's for money. It's because of money. It's not because of security. And if people would just get this through their heads that all the other stuff the TSA is doing, you know, confiscating, a.k.a. stealing people's belongings, has nothing to do with security. It has to do with just let's show the world, let's show Americans that we're doing something, by George. It might not make any sense, but we're doing something, and clearly doing something is better than doing nothing for all these credulous people who think a terrorist is hiding around every corner.
And like you said, it's to get us used to further oppression. And the thing that got me about the Boston thing was, you know, the response by the police state was appalling. But when I mention it, all the people attack me for saying, oh, you weren't here, Cindy. You don't know how awful the bombing was. And they were, like, supporting the government for that reaction.
Right.
And that's what saddens me so much.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa Simeone, we just have a couple more minutes, but I do want you to, again, give your blog, the TSA News, but do you see, like, in the future with the privatization that the TSA will be taken over by some private security company?
It won't matter if they are. It really doesn't matter because there'll still be, even if a private company takes over, they'll be just as abusive as the current government employees.
Of course.
So it doesn't really matter one way or the other. I mean, because the TSA itself, which will still be a government at the top, it'll still be a government department, a department of DHS, and they're going to set the rules and they're going to set the procedures. So I don't care whether it's a privately paid goon or a government paid goon assaulting me. It's going to be the same assault. It's not going to matter.
Well, the only concern I have is that it is as little oversight and accountability we have for governmental agencies, you know, private companies are even less.
That's often the case. In this case, I would say just for this particular subject, again, I just don't think it's like six of one, half dozen of the other. It's not going to be any worse. You know, right now the TSA workers are unionized. And by the way, I am a proud union member. I'm a member of AFTRA-SAG. So I'm obviously pro-union. However, the fact that the TSA government workers got unionized means we'll never, ever, ever get rid of them. We will never get rid of them. So, again, I don't care if they're paid by the government or paid by private sector. You know, it's still my tax dollars paying for them to abuse me. That's what it comes down to.
Well, absolutely. And not only your tax dollars, but also our consumer dollars, too. It's not cheap to fly at all.
This is really clearly the airlines are complicit because, again, if the airlines wanted to change this, they could. They have a lot of clout. But they are allowing their passengers, their customers, to be abused. Why? Because the customers have said, fine, we're willing to be abused. We're willing to put up with anything to get on that plane. And the airlines know that, and Uncle Sam knows that, and that's the position that we're in.
Okay.
And how long, by the way, before this comes to all aspects? They're already doing all aspects of our lives. They're already doing these kind of frisks and unwarrantless searches at stadiums, at concerts. They did
right.
it at Coachella Music Festival. They were actually groping people to get into Coachella Music Festival. I mean, obviously people are willing to put up with it.
Yeah, I saw that. We were in Philly and there was a concert, and we were driving by, I saw some really aggressive frisking going on, and I wondered, you know, what was happening. Was there some kind of mass arrest? And all it was that people were trying to get into a show.
It is conditioning. It is grooming. It's conditioning the populace to be compliant and obedient and to put up with whatever comes down the pike. And again, every time they something like this happens, they ratchet it up a little bit more and they see how much people are willing to put up with. And I just don't – I wish I could say I see some end in sight. I wish there was something that would happen and then people would say, no, we won't put up with this. But so far, that's not going on.
When I travel in California where I live, or if I travel like in the eastern part of the country, I always either take a train or a bus, and I'm just really like dreading the time when those kinds of practices go on for taking trains and buses too. But, you know, I live in California and I just really feel like due to time restraints, well,
it's
I just rode my
started.
Bike across the country. It took 3 months. But,
right.
You know, that is, and then I fly overseas a lot too to do work, and it's all about work. It's not about relaxation
or
voluntary travel. So, yeah, you know, I just really, I'll just have to keep speaking up. And Wednesday when I get frisked, I'll do that part. Oh, you're touching my boobs. Oh, you're touching my vagina, and things like that while I'm being frisked. So I like that idea. So Lisa, what is your blog again?
It's TSANewsBlog.com, TSANewsBlog.com.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show and for doing this really important work to stand up for our rights, and that's basically what it is. People are just totally, you know, giving up any kind of human right for what Benjamin Franklin called temporary security.
Mm-hmm.
And And to me, that's just really the saddest thing is, you know, you say that the parents are letting those people frisk their children. That's telling their children that anybody in a uniform can, you know, sexually abuse them or physically abuse them or emotionally abuse them, right?
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
There was a cop car pulled out in front of my house a few months ago before I came out on the tour, and my three-year-old granddaughter stood on the front porch and said, "What are the stupid cops doing here?" And people were appalled, but I want to keep encouraging that behavior in her, you know? Don't take crap from people just because they have a uniform and a badge and a gun.
Yes, exactly.
So anyway, Lisa, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Box, and I hope you have a good week and a good holiday, whatever you do on that day. It's not a day of celebration for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you for having me, Cindy, and thank you for your hard work as well.
Okay, Lisa Simeone, thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's the Soapbox for today, and I will be getting on an airplane Wednesday, July 3rd to finally head home after 3 months being on the road with Tour de Peace. So I'll have to do battle with the TSA again, as I do every time I have to fly. So as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, from Community Progressive Radio. I'd like to thank my guest, Lisa Simeone, and I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I hope that you have a wonderful holiday with your family or whatever you're doing this week. So this is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.